U.S. remote hearing of the House Projecting Homeless Distributions Order. The first order of business is the clerk take the roll.
All right, Chair Gomez, it's really hard to hear you.
Oh, no, really? I'm having trouble with my computer audio, just like Representative Breyer is. Can people hear me?
No, I can't.
Very low.
Yeah, you're really broken up.
All right, well, I'm not talking much during this hearing. Unfortunately, we're just going to have to try to get through it because I've been working with this audio problem for a couple days now. So if we have to, we'll have Vice Chair Keeler take over. But let's just do the roll if folks can hear me.
Yes. Okay. Chair Gomez.
Present.
Gomez present. Vice Chair Keeler.
Keeler present.
Vice Chair Keeler present. Lead New Brindley.
Present.
Lead New Brindley present. Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Heinrich.
Heinrich present.
Heinrich present. Hollins.
Hollins present.
Hollins present. Hornstein.
Hornstein present.
Hornstein present. Howard. Howard. Cagle.
Present.
Cagle present. Petersburg.
Petersburg present.
Petersburg present. Ryer. Ryer.
I believe her audio is not working either.
Got it. Ryer's present. We have a quorum.
Thank you. Excuse me. How's my audio doing now, Robert?
It's still a little garbly, but...
Okay. Vice Chair Keeler, do you want to take over chairing? We'll do the minutes, and then we'll make sure that you have the materials that you need, and then to that, the bills that we're hearing. But Representative Keeler, did you have a chance to review the minutes from our February 9th meeting?
I did, Madam Chair. I'll move those minutes.
Great. So Representative Keeler is moving approval of the minutes for February 9th, 2022. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, if folks could take a second to unmute, and all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? No. The motion prevails, and the minutes for February 9th, 2022 are adopted as submitted. I'm not going to say much because people can't hear me. So we're hearing two bills today, and we're just going to kind of roll right into those. First on the agenda, we have House File 3200. The bill was referred to the division from the Human Services Committee. Representative Hollins, welcome to your committee. Would you like to move your bill?
Sorry. Yes, Madam Chair.
Are you a little rough today, you guys? Nobody can hear me. Representative Hollins is sick, but has rallied to present, so thank you. House File 3200 is now before the committee. Representative Hollins, please go ahead and present.
I couldn't hear anything you just said. I'm so sorry.
Okay, go ahead. You can hear me. Just go, and we'll pass it to Keeler.
Do you want me to just, I'm gonna go for it. Sorry, apologies. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members. This is a really straightforward bill. I think we can all agree that, you know, when we talk about homelessness, we know that our ultimate goal is not to just have folks in shelters, but also to have everybody in safe, stable, permanent housing. And transitional housing programs that are time limited have had a great success rate in moving people from homelessness into permanent housing. So, you know, individuals who work in these spaces and providers have identified that our transitional housing program needs both some policy changes and some additional resources to meet the need of our growing homeless population. So specifically, this bill seeks to move the transitional timeline of the program from 24 months to 36 months. As we've heard, there is a greater need and it's taking longer for people to transition to permanent housing. And also, this bill seeks to appropriate $9 million in order to cover the existing funding gap of $6 million, along with the anticipated added cost of extending the timeline to a full 36 months. And so I am very happy to have some amazing testifiers here today. And I think we're starting with Ms. Rhonda Otteson from Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless.
Thank you, Chair Holland or Representative Hollins. I'm gonna take it from here just because I think we're having problems hearing Chair Gomez. So I do believe you do have some testifiers here. We'll start with Rhonda Otteson. If you can tell us your name, title, and position for the record, and then continue with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler, and thank you, Chair Gomez, and members of the committee. I'm Rhonda Otteson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. I'm happy to be with you today to present House File 3200 to increase funding for the transitional housing program, along with the two key policy changes that Representative Hollins outlined. The transitional housing program is an important bridge program for families, youth, survivors of domestic violence, and adults as they transition from homelessness to a permanent home. Across the state, this program allows the flexibility to provide transitional housing in a scattered site model or a fixed site model. Funding for the program provides rental assistance and funds ongoing case management or support services to support the holistic needs of families, youth, and individuals transitioning out of homelessness. During their time in the program, a case plan is developed and a stable, permanent home is the ultimate goal. Over the past 2 years, the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless has worked closely with community leaders all across the state to identify and address unsheltered homelessness. In these conversations with providers and people with lived experience of homelessness, temporary rental housing subsidies paired with support services have been identified as a key priority. Time-limited housing programs like the transitional housing program really have a great success in moving people from homelessness into a permanent home that meets their needs, as Representative Hollins pointed out. This is confirmed through data through the Homeless Management Information System. For youth, individuals, and families leaving shelter and entering into transitional housing, 78% had maintained their temporary home through the transitional housing program or exited to another permanent housing destination. In particular, this program is especially helpful for women and children fleeing domestic violence and youth experiencing homelessness. There are several key policy changes in the bill that Representative Hollins explained, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about those. First, extending the standard timeline for assistance from 24 to 36 months. This is important for two key reasons. First, in listening to people with lived experience and of homelessness and housing instability, the transition period from homelessness to housing takes approximately 12 months. Second, finding a home is extremely difficult given the lack of homes that are available and affordable. The Housing Choice Voucher Program waiting lists vary by region, but many take years to gain access. By extending the timeline to 36 months, there is an opportunity for greater success for program participants to exit to one of those permanent destinations with a voucher. Next, we're advocating for changes to the policy language on lines 2.6 and 2.7 of the bill. This removes the 10% cap language from statute. We heard from providers across the state that the current language was confusing and extensions were rarely used. Finally, MCH is advocating for the $9 million increase to the transitional housing program. There is a current funding gap of over $6 billion, as Representative Hollins pointed out, for this program. This increase will help close that gap and provide that additional funding needed to extend program services from 24 months to 36 months. Most importantly, it will help families, youth, and individuals across the state find a permanent home. Thank you for your time, and I and our policy director, Zach Eichten, are available for any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Addison, for your testimony. Next, we'll go to Jen Feinemann. Please let us know your name, title, and organization along with your testimony.
Thank you, Vice Chair Keeler, Chair Gomez, and the committee. My name is Jen Feinemann. I'm the Executive Director for Partners for Housing, a nonprofit based in Mankato. I'm asking for your support of House File 3200, which would appropriate additional funding for people experiencing housing crisis to give them permanent, stable housing with crucial case management support, which addresses their unique barriers, which helps them on the path to self-sufficiency. Partners for Housing is located in Blue Earth County, an area that continues to be identified as severely cost-burdened. The lack of affordable housing causes a financial strain on individuals and families, leading to more people in need of housing choice vouchers and other income-based programs more than there is capacity. Our organization works to provide a variety of housing options to meet the unique needs of the region. Specifically, we provide emergency residential shelter for up to 90 days with case management at our locations in Mankato and St. Peter. We offer a variety of supportive housing programs such as transitional housing, rapid rehousing, and long-term housing. And we also operate below market rate rental, permanent rental units for low-income households. Additionally, we utilize some COVID response funding to temporarily house people in local hotels. However, that money was quickly spent and they're no longer allowing homeless people or people that are positive for COVID to stay there. Every day, our staff receives desperate calls from people who are homeless or at significant risk of becoming homeless, and we can only add them to the wait list. This includes singles, families, youth, and people fleeing domestic violence. And it's important to note that 46% of those that we serve are children under the age of 18. One such household in need is Ian and her family, who are asylees who have been in transition for over 10 years. Ian's family fled to the U.S. after living in a camp in Somalia, where they watched many of their family members be murdered. Ian's husband died shortly after they arrived in the United States. Their family was put on a bus for the Twin Cities. However, they could not find a place to stay. Ian, who spoke little English and has limited sight ability, was having great difficulty in navigating systems to get financial assistance and food for her family. After coming to our Mankato shelter, our team worked with Ian through an interpreter to connect to many resources. During their stay, the family was pulled for our transitional housing program. And after being in the program for a year and a half now, Ian now reads and speaks some English, and her family is flourishing with the help of our social worker. It is likely that they would still be in transition if not for our housing options. However, the household requires ongoing case management support to address challenging situations such as Ian's continued medical hurdles, the unexpected death of a child, and mental health support for Ian and her children as they work through the trauma that they've experienced. The looming end of their two-year support will be like another rug pulled out from underneath her, and that will be catastrophic for their family. Our organization's THP-based funding has been flat for several years while the cost to provide these services has increased. It is also critical as our one-time COVID funding, which has supported additional households to be supported during the pandemic, comes to an end in September. Therefore, I implore you to support House File 3200 to provide meaningful funding for transitional housing. I believe that continued funding for a variety of options is most impactful, shelter plus transitional housing plus permanent housing, as funding only one or two creates a bottleneck in our systems. Additionally, I ask that you extend the program length from 24 to 36 months so we can provide a more customized approach to keep people housed as they work to be self-sufficient. Everyone in our state should have the opportunity for a place to call home. Please partner with agencies like ours who would like to be part of the solution to this perpetual concern. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. We'll move on to Lucy Zanders. You can let us know your name, title, organization with your testimony.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lucy Zanders, and I am the executive director of Teresa Living Center here in St. Paul. Teresa Living Center is a service provider for singles and single parent families exiting out of homelessness. I've served single parent families for 4 years as a transitional housing program, which later went to a rapid rehousing model. Teresa Living Center also provides rapid rehousing for single men and women transitioning out of homelessness for a 12-month period. And currently, we serve up to 16 single women in a residential transitional housing program. In our state, we have a crisis in housing, especially for individuals exiting out of homelessness. There are so many factors working against the exit out of homelessness into housing stability. Transitional housing programs currently serves as a wonderful tool allowing individuals transitional time to adjust their lives to achieve a somewhat stable life. Transitional housing allows time for the individuals to secure a safe environment, stabilize their life in terms of looking for affordable housing, look for employment, and stabilizing their mental and chemical health. It also allows them the time to establish financial stability and correct any rental history barriers they may have. Our current transitional housing programs allows only 2 years to transition. From reasons stated previously, individuals need more than 2 years to make that important changes in their life. Our typical client comes into our transitional housing program with less than adequate income, and the first area of concentration is to find employment. But in order to find that good employee, they must first manage their physical, mental, and chemical health. It's overwhelming. I am totally in support of extending the transitional housing limit from 2 years to 3 years and allowing funds to support services to handle their financial stability, their search for employment, and stabilizing any health issues. As somewhat of an analogy, as our representatives, you serve a 2-year term. And as representatives, you run based on a large list of things you would like to make changes to or be impactful on in our state. Sometimes it's overwhelming. And if you're new to the job, you realize 2 years is just to the point where you're learning the system. And now you have people you serve saying you did nothing that you promised. Why? Because 2 years is not enough, especially with the big cross section of issues you and your constituents have identified. Well, we're asking you to consider the people we serve exiting out of homelessness, which have far greater issues than any of us can imagine. And we've decided to say you have a lot of barriers, but we're giving you 2 years to correct them. It's an impossible feat. So please consider and support extending the transitional housing limit from 2 years to 3 years, as the bill proposed, and adding additional funding to support the extension and the intensity of the work found in transitional housing. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Zanders. Quick mic check. Am I doing all right? I'm doing all right. Cool. I've emerged from my underwater habitat I was in. I see that Representative Petersburg has a question. We're just going to take, we have one more testifier and then we'll move to questions.
That's fine.
Okay, great. Thanks, Rep. Thank you so much, Ms. Zanders, for that testimony. We appreciate it. So we have a public testifier signed up to speak about this bill. We'll go to them and then do member questions. Sue Watlove Phillips, Executive Director of MICA, are you on the call?
Yes, thank you, Chair Gomez, and thank you, committee. Again, I'm Sue Watlove Phillips. I'm the executive director of MICA, the Metropolitan Interfaith Council on Affordable Housing, and president of the National Coalition for the Homeless. We are very supportive of House File 3200. And just to give you just a really brief little history of how this program developed, in the late 70s and 80s, as homelessness was starting to grow in this episode that we are now in our fifth decade, at the national level, there was a real movement to a right to shelter. Here in Minnesota, we really wanted to focus on housing. So in 1982, as we started the National Coalition, and in 1983, as I had the honor to also help in starting the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, we were really focused on a housing model of getting people, keeping people in housing, preventing homelessness, and really assisting people to get into housing and then transition back into their own place. And so the idea of temporary housing was being discussed on a number of different levels. I had the opportunity to be directing a shelter at my church, Elam Church, and listen to people experiencing homelessness. And what they were describing was a type of temporary transitional housing, utilizing rental housing in the community, getting help, getting jobs, going to school, and taking care of their needs so that they could move on and get back into their own place. From their ideas, from a lot of prayer, a lot of shooting from the hip, because we couldn't find anybody else doing it around the country at that time, we developed Elam Transitional Housing, one of the first transitional housing programs in the country. That became the model for Hennepin County, using property tax dollars to fund four transitional programs in 84. And then later in 84, we were able to pass temporary housing legislation, renamed transitional housing at the state level. We believe we were one of the first states to pass that legislation. And the real focus has been discussed already was around making sure that we got people back into housing as quickly as possible. Some people now call it a more of a housing first model, but basically getting people into housing, helping them get jobs, go to school, take care of the different issues that they were facing in their lives and be able to move on. So we talked about self-reliance is really how do you take care of yourself, but then also how do you become helpful in supporting other people within the community also. So during that time in the 80s and early 90s, we developed 100 transitional programs across the state of Minnesota. And that really became the model, not under Elam transitional housing. Each community developed their own differing type of transitional housing. As Rhonda mentioned, some are using rental scattered sites. Some use school buildings, some use old farms that we had, some used convents, rectories, a wide variety of buildings that we utilized for different types of transitional housing program. We were able to pass the McKinney Act on the federal level that did have transitional housing over the years. HUD moved away and really put their dollars into supportive housing, which is also an important part of the continuum to housing. But we really saw that there was not the emphasis on continuing to support the great work of transitional housing, which I had the honor to serve as executive director for Elam for 30 years. And it's an incredibly successful program in assisting folks to get out of homelessness very quickly, get into a stable place to live, get the services and help that they need. We based it on people's dreams and their strengths, where they really wanted to head in life, and then to identify what the barriers were, and then to develop short and long-term goals to help them in moving forward. So it's critical for us to invest in the entire continuum to housing to prevent homelessness and assist people with their immediate needs so they can be rehoused as quickly as possible in our community. So this significant increase in funding and the changes in the transitional housing program will strengthen the continuum to housing and will balance the opportunities to people at risk and experiencing homelessness. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Whitelaw Phillips. Is there anyone else who wishes to testify on this bill? I'm not seeing anyone, so let's go to Representative Petersburg. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is kind of just a fiscal question, I guess. So in the bill, we're changing the timelines from up to 2 years to up to 3 years. And I think there, you know, you can make an argument that that's a benefit. But it seems like when you get then down to 2.6, 2.7 of the bill, we give the commissioner the ability to then ignore that with the entire dollars and could extend it for 4, 5, or 6 years. So my question is just this. With that option out there, have we done any analysis or review of how that might impact the number of people we can help? Because obviously when you extend the timeline with the same amount of dollars, it does eliminate some of the possibilities. So do we know what kind of impact that will have on the overall ability to help people?
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Representative Hollins, did you want to address that, or should we toss it to a testifier?
I think that's a fantastic question, and I think we should hand it over to Ms. Otteson for analysis.
Ms. Otteson?
I'd like to invite Zach, our public policy director, to talk a little bit more about those nitty-gritty details, because he's been engaged in understanding that piece with the 10% cap.
Perfect.
Perfect. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Eichten, please just introduce yourself for the record and go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. Thanks for having me here. My name is Zach Eichten. I'm the Director of Public Policy with the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. Representative Petersburg, that's a great question. Thank you for calling attention to it. The current funding shortfall for this program is around $6 million. To your question of if we're extending use at the same level of funding, costing more money, that's why we wanted to have that additional $3 million that we're asking for in the appropriation section. To bring that up to $9 million. And then to the question of what's the purpose of this language change in here? Really, the way that it's currently written has caused some confusion for providers on when to utilize extensions. With a 10% limit, there was several providers we talked to that felt that that could only be used in like really dire circumstances and therefore weren't applying for those extensions as often as they maybe should to be able to better serve the folks in their programs. By removing that language, we're still able to do the extensions in great need, but we're removing some of the confusion around the language.
Thank you, Mr. Eichten.
Can I have a follow-up on that? Because that, I guess the numbers just don't quite match up to me, because if we're moving from 2 years to 3 years, that's a 50% increase in time. And from 6 million to 9 million is a 50% increase of time. And yet, so it seems to me that makes sense, go from 6 million to 9 million in order to cover that. But now we have the potential of covering even more than that into future years, which to me would indicate we would have less dollars available than for others that are in the 0 to 2 or 0 to 3 years. So somehow that doesn't quite make sense. And I'm wondering if you have any more thoughts or directions on whether or not I'm just wrong or if there's something else we need to look at.
Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Petersburg. Mr. Eichten, did you have any?
Yes, thank you, Chair Gomez and Representative Petersburg. The current base budget for this program is just over $6 million as well. So that first part of it, we're doubling the base budget with that first $6 million, and then the additional $3 million would cover that extension piece of it. Yeah. Thank you for the question.
Thank you. Rep. Petersburg, anything further?
It sounds like the base budget is $6 million, and we're adding $9 million more onto it to make it go from a $6 million base to a $15 million base. I think that's what we're talking about, correct? Okay, thank you.
I see Representative New Brindley has her hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if you can get, I know, I told you I broke the broken record on this, but can you tell us, or to Representative Hollins or any of the testifiers, does anyone have an accounting of how much additional money went into the transitional housing over the last couple of years during COVID and all the money that was infused? Do we know how much went into this?
I'm not aware of money from the federal program going into this specific or from the federal government going into this program, but Mr. Eichten, I don't know if you.
Or state money too. We certainly appropriated quite a bit of state money too.
Mr. Eichten, I mean, unfortunately I only would know about last year and this year, so I'm not sure if maybe Mr. Eichten has some history from before, 2021 or whatever.
I think Chair Gomez, I think Suella Phillips might be able to answer this question. She has her hand.
Oh, sure. Yeah, Ms. Butler Phillips, did you have any information to share with Lee New Brindley?
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Representative. So transitional housing has not seen any significant increases on the state level for a number of years. In regards to the American Rescue Plan dollars and the CARES funding, there was no dollars that were specifically put into transitional housing. Most of those dollars went into the emergency services program funding to help in both doing some prevention outreach and providing shelter for those dollars. So there weren't any specific dollars that went into transitional housing. There may have been some local communities that received American Rescue Plans directly that may have chosen to put some dollars into transitional housing. I cannot give you a specific number on that.
Thank you, Ms. Watlow Phillips. Representative Brindley?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you. That actually was really helpful. And I guess my other question would be to Representative Hollins. Was this request in the budget last year?
Representative Hollins.
My understanding is that it was not. It was, this is a modified request. So no, it was not in the budget last year.
Representative Newbrunley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Hollins. I appreciate that. I know I will be a broken record, but I still have concerns about this, particularly when we are adding to base funding, and we're certainly more than doubling the base funding. That's just something that should happen when we're doing a budget, not a supplemental emergency budget year. So I will be opposed to this for now, but and I do think that Representative Petersburg asks some reasonable questions about the program moving forward and the changes that have been made. I think it's already extending it again by 50%. And then in addition to that, there's effectively no cap on it now. Whereas before there was a cap, I mean, it could be extended beyond the 24 months if needed for a short period of time to get people ready to go. But now it effectively does not have a cap. So the 36th month could almost be done away with given the other changes to language. And so I'm just not comfortable with that moving forward right now. But clearly this is an issue that we should bring back up when we're doing a budget. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newbrindley. Just wanted to go briefly to Mr. Eichten, and then we'll go to Representative Howard.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gomez, and thank you, Representative Newbrindley. I wanted to clarify that the reason that this was not in the budget request last year, this was something that came to us out of, we held several dozen listening sessions around the state this year, and folks with lived experience brought this up to us this summer, which is why it's coming to us in the supplemental year as opposed to last year. But I really appreciate the support for addressing this issue moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Eichten. Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. I know we've heard it a few times, some variation of the theme from Representative Brindley, that because this isn't a budget year, we can't do X, Y, or Z. And I just really want to challenge that thinking. It really feels like it's in something that maybe political folks under the dome might think it's a way of thinking. But the reality is, when you talk to Minnesotans who are struggling across our state and our communities, it doesn't matter to them whether this is a budget year or a fiscal year or not. The reality is we have a significant surplus and an opportunity to make meaningful investments that will make a meaningful, tangible impact for families all across the state. And that really should be our focus, and I see this bill is exactly that. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Howard. Going back to Representative Newbrindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate you giving me a moment since I was called out in that. I would just say, I mean, there's good reason for this. When we are in a budget year, we are looking at the budget in totality, right? And we're able to manage all of the moving pieces of a budget. And I think in this supplemental budget proposals, the problem is we're only looking at little individual pieces. And as we have talked about, particularly in this committee, we know that none of these pieces operate independently of one another. All of this works in concert with each other, and we should be in a position where when we are investing real dollars, when we are more than doubling budgets, we need to look at that in the context of the entire budget, in the context of the entire system. There are actually good reasons to do that and to be a little cautious about a piecemeal approach to a budget. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Newbrindley. And, you know, I think that my understanding is that there is, you know, at least $4 or $5 billion of the budget surplus that's ongoing. And, you know, the governor has put in front of us a comprehensive budget around homelessness and housing, and So we're taking an honest look at it. I mean, I know that it's unusual for a supplemental budget to be like this, but this is an unusual year in that we have, you know, a big kind of unprecedented surplus, including some ongoing dollars. So we are taking the opportunity to, you know, kind of to strike while the iron is hot so that we can help out people in our community that we know need a hand. So appreciate that discussion. Let's see, seeing no further questions or comments from members, Representative Hollins, did you have any closing comments you wanted to share with us?
I just wanted to thank you, Madam Chair, first of all, and thank you to the committee members for this discussion. I think it's important, and I think, you know, we'll continue talking about it. We all know that transitional housing is necessary and important, and I appreciate my colleagues across the aisle being willing to consider it, even if they're not necessarily going to support it right now. And finally, I'd like to thank my testifiers for bringing their time and their expertise to this committee, and I hope that that you can all support me and support this bill, House File 3200. Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much, Representative Hollins. And seeing no further discussion, Representative Hollins will renew her motion that House File 3200 be referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. And the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Gomez.
Gomez, aye.
Gomez, aye. Vice Chair Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lead New Brindley.
No.
Lead New Brindley, nay. Davids.
Davids, no.
Davids, nay. Heinrich. Heinrich. Heinrich absent. Hollins.
Hollins, aye.
Hollins, aye. Hornstein.
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard.
Howard, aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle.
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg.
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, nay. Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. We have seven ayes, three nays, and one absent.
There being seven ayes and three nays, the motion prevails, and House File 3200 is on its way to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. Thanks, Representative Holmes. Next on the agenda, we have House File 3294. This bill was referred to the division from the Human Services Committee. Representative Ryer, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 3294 to be referred to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee.
Great. We have House File 3294 before the committee. Representative Ryer, please go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. I'm here today to talk about House File 3294, a bill that provides funding for the Emergency Services Grants Program. This program is one of the backbones of our shelter system, ensuring that the physical shelter spaces we create have the resources they need to operate. This bill asks for $35 million for fiscal year 2023 and $30 million for fiscal year 24 and 25 for a total of $95 million. These funds will be used for the ongoing operations and programming for all emergency shelters statewide, including the new shelter capacity proposed in House File 3090. Now, I'd like to share with you what this means in the life of a person receiving these services. When I was in my 20s, I was in a shelter for 30 days with my infant son. This gave us a safe and secure roof over our head. We also had emotional support from staff to recover from trauma, help getting vouchers for housing. Staff brought expertise about obtaining food assistance, healthcare coverage, and provided legal support and advocacy for those who needed it. They took care of my baby while I took care of myself and did what needed to be done. And so much more, all delivered in a place that was homey and well-maintained. I would not be where I am today without the support I received in those critical 30 days. The Emergency Services Grant Program is a flexible program adaptable to the needs of each community that uses it, no matter where it is in the state or the specific population they serve. These services are the lifeline that people in shelter need and that elevate the shelter experience to be a step into stability. From listening to the conversations in this committee, I know that every single one of us has the same goal of people having safe and stable housing. And in fact, over the years, the Emergency Services Grants Program has had bipartisan support. And this year, the lead author in the Senate is Senator Utke. I hope you'll agree that increasing funding for this bill is one of the very important steps we can take. With that, I'll be glad to take your questions, look forward to hearing from our testifiers, and ask for your support. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, I believe you're muted.
Thank you. So we have some testifiers that are joining us. First, we're going to hear again from Ms. Otteson from the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless. If you could introduce yourself again and go ahead and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you again, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. I'm Rhonda Otteson, Executive Director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, and I'm happy to be here testifying for the second time today about the Emergency Services Program. The Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless supports the governor's proposed amount of $95 million, along with how that aligns with this bill. On any given night, there are about 20,000 people experiencing homelessness, and that's according to the 2018 Wilder Homeless Study. Between 2015 and 2018, unsheltered homelessness across the state increased by 62%, and overall homelessness has increased by 10%. Even before the pandemic emerged, we were in a crisis. The emergency program is a vital component of the homeless response system. As you know, investing resources into the shelter system is an equity issue. Black, Indigenous, and people of color experience homelessness at much higher rates than the white population. According to the most recent data from the statewide homelessness management information system, Black Minnesotans are just 5% of the general population, but represent 36% of people experiencing homelessness. And the Native or Indigenous population is about 1% of Minnesota's population, but represents 18% of people experiencing homelessness. Shelters are a critical life-saving piece of our community response to homelessness. However, they are vastly underfunded. Until 2019, state funding for shelter operations through the Emergency Services Program was less than $1 million a year. In recent years, COVID response funding has helped to prop up and fund this critical need, but these resources are going away. The Emergency Services Program provides funding to shelters with fixed locations and scattered sites, such as apartments or motel settings in rural areas. ESP allows local communities to provide a local tailored response to the needs of people experiencing homelessness and to complement the local resources that are available. It also allows organizations that serve culturally specific communities to integrate important cultural values and practices that are affirming and healing. After my testimony, you'll hear from shelter providers and people that have lived in shelters about the opportunities to strengthen the program and the critical need for ESP funding services and resources. A few of the ways that the Emergency Services Program funding helps shelters includes operations, staffing, and supports to connect those shelter guests with the needed resources and services to obtain temporary or permanent housing. Additionally, the Emergency Services Program funds street outreach programs where staff work to connect individuals and families that are unsheltered with shelter and housing or other critical health needs or support services. An investment of $95 million over the next 3 years will allow shelter providers to move toward a service-rich environment, which is more effective in moving shelter guests into transitional and permanent housing options. Federal and state pandemic response resources have strengthened the shelter response system to react to COVID-19. However, we're now facing a funding cliff and need to make investments to support longer-term sustainable solutions in communities across the state. An increase to ESP will impact every single region of the state, and therefore, I ask for your support today on House File 3294. Thank you, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. I, along with my colleague, Zach, are again available for any questions you might have.
Thank you very much, Ms. Otteson. I saw Rep. Petersburg's hand up, but we're going to go through the testifiers and then we'll go to questions from members. So next up, we have Jason Urbanchik. You'll have to excuse me if I have butchered your name. It has a lot of consonants in it, so I was trying to figure it out. But welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Hello, Chair Gomez and committee members. My name is Jason Urbanchik. I was homeless on and off from 2009 to 2018. I'm proud to say today that I am 39 months sober, and in those months I've been housed for 34 of them. During this time, I've become a mentor to my peers and a leader in the Moorhead region while serving on the West Central Continuum Care Board. I would like to start by saying that chemical dependency can be a major factor regarding homelessness. Not everyone that experiences homelessness struggles with addiction. In fact, more often than not, addiction is a side effect of homelessness rather than the cause of becoming homeless. Excuse me. While there's a need for low barrier shelters, we also need shelters where being sober has the option to be prioritized. It needs to be both. The solution to homelessness cannot be a cookie cutter approach. However, our homeless system has never been in a place where we could do both due to a lack of funding. In my own life, I've been homeless in multiple states and struggled with addiction. Shortly after moving to Minnesota, reality smacked me in the face, and I realized it was time I got motivated and get my own home. I wish I would have had this type of support I knew I needed, but unfortunately, the shelter I went to was not able to provide me with the right support. I'm fortunate to be the type of person that will never give up, even though I had to go through some very tough times. Without this determination, I could still be stuck in the cycle of homelessness to this day. This ultimately led me getting a position as a circulation distribution coordinator at the Fargo Forum, but due to the pandemic and the company moving their offices out of town, my position was dissolved. I'm still looking for employment today, but my goal is to work in the human services field, and I'm meeting several hurdles along the way. That's a story for another day. For me, when I was homeless, I needed to be surrounded by others that had the same desire to be actively sober, involved in the community, and to have a home of my own. I also needed more support in guiding me through the very confusing homelessness response system in the state of Minnesota. Now that I've achieved these goals, I've begun to really think through and talk to others on what needs to take place at shelters to get people in and out of homelessness quickly. All these solutions take resources, and House File 3294 can do exactly that. Some things that could come out of investing into homelessness are high quality staff and the ability to keep them employed. This means better pay and benefits and more holistic approach to staff and shelters. This should include the ability to hire people who have been homeless because experience should be viewed as at least equal to education. A way to start working on goals right away when entering shelter rather than just only focusing on the immediate crisis. Services and opportunities for people who do not have high barriers. We also need better resources for employment, seeking training such as classes to build skills and provide incentives for people to attend. Wraparound services for after leaving the shelter are very important, including more education on how to live properly, including once you get housed, because trauma doesn't stop just because you get a house or an apartment. I'm now involved in various leadership positions in my community where I can use my story to better my community. Being able to testify today is just one example, but I have done similar things in the Moorhead region and statewide. I'm just one person that has the will to find the support to get out of homelessness. If we invest as a state to truly end homelessness, there can be more success stories such as myself. I hope you will join me in supporting the need for more resources towards ending homelessness. We especially need more funding in the emergency services program through House File 3294. This is a crucial investment toward ending homelessness here in Minnesota. Shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness. Thank you for your time. I'm available for any questions you may have.
Thank you so much for your testimony, Mr. Urbanchik, and congratulations on 39 months sober. That's incredible.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate you sharing your story with us. Next up, we have Pamela Hughes. Ms. Hughes, if you would just introduce yourself and then proceed with your testimony.
Welcome. Who's you? Me, Gwich, Gibir, Zhuaguma, Nogum. What I said was hello and thank you all for being here today. My name is Pamela Hughes. I work for the Boise Fort Tribal Nation. with our substance use programs and our homeless programs. And so I'm just here today to ask for your support in House File 3294. One of the things that I would like to say is I learned a valuable lesson from my grandfather, who was my teacher. And one of the things he always taught me was to speak from the heart. And so that's what I'm going to do today. And I'm going to be speaking for my people. So for me, this is, I always try to ask different organizations or individuals that ask me to talk. I'm not a public speaker. I actually have a fear of it, but I do want to represent our people. And so I just want to thank you for inviting me to the table. That's one of the biggest things that I've always seen, is that our people are not at the table when decisions are being made. And so that in itself is, to me, that's an honor to be asked to do this. And so I know for Boys Fort, we are rural, northern rural Minnesota. We actually have three sectors to our reservation. One sector is land. No one lives on it. The other two sectors are where our people live. They are about 57 miles apart from each other. We currently receive $25,000 over a two-year period for emergency shelter. We do not have a shelter here at Boys Fort. The closest shelter would be in Eveleth, Minnesota. So we utilize the hotel motel vouchers, which are helpful, but for short term. For me, what I would like to see come out of the House File 3294 is additional Junian, which is money. And the reason is we need to have shelters on both sides of our reservation, you know, and we need staff. And that's where this, the House File 3294 would be very helpful in order for us to hire staff. You know, being we're remote, it is hard to find staff, but it's well needed. You know, like one of the things that I try to say about my people is we are not homeless, we are houseless. And so for us, when you hear my people talk about they're going home, they mean they're coming back home. They're coming back to our reservation. That's what home is to our people. You know, without a shelter here on our reservation, our people are not getting the services that they need, because we have to use hotel motels, which are a very short stay. We have limited staff to provide them case management. And as Jason had spoken earlier about substance use and mental health, that's a huge impact on our people. Rhonda had talked about the percentages. And I always say we represent 1.5% of the state of Minnesota. And when you look at our numbers, whether it's homelessness, substance use, out-of-home placement, our numbers are the highest. And when you look at, when you're talking about homelessness, that's all wrapped into a ball or like a circle. And all of those are intertwined into our people being homeless. So, you know, I think even because there is so much trauma with our people, I say that trauma, that historical trauma, is in our DNA. Our people need to heal. And in order for us to start healing, we need those additional dollars so that we can place actual shelters in both of our communities and have staff there to staff those that are providing those case management services, helping individuals with the whole referral process. You know, one of the things that I try to say is our culture is our prevention and our traditions are our treatment. And being from a rural area, we're sometimes forgotten about, and so are my people, that we're forgotten about. And I think for me, I would really like to have you all support this House File 3294, because by you supporting that, you are supporting my people. Miigwech.
Thank you so much, Ms. Hughes, for being here and speaking from the heart. We appreciate it a lot. And you might not think of yourself as a public speaker, but you did amazing, and we appreciate, you know, that it's hard sometimes to come in front of a group like this, but your words are really important, so thank you for doing that. Next, we have Christine, again, sorry if I'm butchering your last name, Michaels, I'm not exactly sure how you pronounce it. So if you could just introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Yes, hello, Madam Chair and members. My name is Chris Michaels, and I am the Director of Housing Stabilization and Opportunity at Catholic Charities of St. Paul and Minneapolis. Overseeing our single adult emergency shelters is my main role and focus in my position. During the pandemic, our work also expanded beyond operating our shelters and day centers to support temporary shelter in hotels, which allowed our large congregate spaces to depopulate by creating safer options for our elderly and most vulnerable shelter guests. Over the last 2 years, a lot of attention has been given to the increased challenges and demands facing emergency shelters and individuals experiencing homelessness as a result of COVID. I could speak at length to the tireless work of my frontline staff to keep our doors open and to show up day after day to support those who are living in the darkest moments of their lives and who have been most greatly impacted by the pandemic. Today, though, I'm here to remind you that we were experiencing a homeless crisis before COVID. While many of us are hoping that the end of the pandemic might finally be near, my team and I know that our work and the need for emergency shelter services is far from over. And we can't go back to business as usual and expect things to change. The pandemic was not kind to any of us, but imagine that at a time when the message from public health partners was to stay home and stay safe, that you did not have a home to go to. Also imagine being left behind and disconnected from access to services that you needed because those services are now being offered remotely. It is difficult to access services remotely when you don't have a phone, a computer, or Wi-Fi. So I sit here today very conflicted. I'm so ready to put the pandemic in the rearview mirror, but I am concerned, stressed, and anxious because I see our guests and clients struggling in a way that I've never have before. The pandemic has left those experiencing homelessness disconnected from the broader community. I feel like providers and those utilizing our services are on an island to fend for ourselves due to the lack of permanent resources, which would better position us to meet the growing needs and better address the inequities of our poorest and most vulnerable community members. Catholic Charities is one of the region's leading shelter providers. Our two single adult emergency shelters were built to shelter 450 men and women. However, over time, before COVID hit, we were regularly sheltering 620 people because of the increasing demand and need in our communities. We did our best to meet the needs of our community and to turn no one away, understanding at the same time that this meant that we were placing mats on the floors for people to sleep instead of giving them a bed. We could not offer added security and support such as lockers and adequate facilities, and increasing demands, not to mention the increasing demands on our staff. To put it simply, we were and still are operating in survival mode. capable of providing almost the most basic supports to meet the most immediate needs of those who come through our doors. All the while knowing there are still many more outside. After decades of lack of public investments, providers like us have been forced to rely on private funding and emergency reserves that are unsustainable at an unsustainable rate. And without the reliability needed to gain a more impactful shelter program and housing, and that is housing focused and focused on shelter outflow. In fact, more than 90% of the funding for our operations at our day centers is privately funded. COVID handed my team a slew of challenges, to be sure, but the emergency COVID funding we received also helped give us a glimpse to the impact that we could have if our state invested the resources truly needed to build a low barrier housing focused system. When COVID forced us to decrease the census of our shelters, my staff could give more attention to individual shelter guests, helping to build trust and the understanding needed to better assess clients' needs and options. When we were able to hire temporary housing navigators, it meant that we could provide more case management to help individuals transition more quickly out of shelter and into stable homes. This is important because the longer a person is homeless, the harder it is for them to exit and the more resources they need to exit successfully. Data suggests that an individual gets entrenched in the shelter system just after 5 months. In many ways, shelter has become the repository of all of the state's failed systems, housing, healthcare, criminal justice. If we want to change shelter and homeless outcomes, we need to build a system that funds services and not just beds. We need services to go beyond simply giving someone a safe place to sleep at night. We need to provide people constant, reliable connections to healthcare, employment counseling, mental services, and more. The emergency services program has the flexibility we need to do this, but it's time to scale the state's investment to the true scope of the problem. House File 3294 would offer resources and stability for Minnesota's shelter system, which would disrupt the trends of our homeless crisis. I hope you will support it. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Michaels, for being here. I appreciate your testimony. Next, we have a public testifier, Suwatlu Phillips. Please introduce yourself again and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and committee members. Again, my name is Suwatlu Phillips. I'm the executive director of MICA and president of the National Coalition for the Homeless. As people of faith, of interfaith, we believe that we are to love and treat others the way that we want to be treated. And from my faith tradition, we believe that how we treat the people with the least is how we treat our God. So as other testifiers have talked about, it is so important that people that have experienced homelessness, our major decision makers, our testifiers, are helping to run the different programs that we are developing. So as I mentioned earlier in my testimony around the transitional housing bill, our hope had been in the early 80s and even into the early 90s that we would not have to create a state emergency services program. We had passed the McKinney Act, which had the emergency shelter grant, now called the Emergency Solution Grant Program, that helped to fund a lot of our shelters across the state. And we were actually able to limit the number of shelters as we were able to move people into transitional housing very quickly and get them into housing. But as we had many changes that happened in the 90s, including we passed the National Affordable Housing Act, the Cranston-Gonzalez Act, and we're very hopeful that we would be creating a lot more housing. We have not done that at the state level or at the federal level, and that the dollars that were available at the federal level were not enough to meet the needs of people here in Minnesota. So in 1997, still on the board of directors for the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless and as a policy chair, we developed the emergency services program to complement the federal resources coming into the state to address this ongoing increasing need for emergency shelters and outreach to folks that were unsheltered in our communities. This has never been a program that has been funded very well by the state. In fact, up until the last couple of years, we spent more money in the state level collecting data on people experiencing homelessness through HMIS, through point in time and other ways that we collect data than we did on the emergency services program. So it is time for us to really take seriously this very excellent, very flexible program, which that's why we designed it that way, so that any community could utilize it to address the variety of ways that people experience homelessness in the state and the differing populations, the diversity of people experiencing homelessness, and to utilize this program to really do that outreach and get people into shelter safe places and then help them make that transition into transitional housing or right into housing. So as we continue to move forward, I think it's just really important for us to recognize that we learned from history is that if we do not invest in affordable housing and we do not invest in prevention, is that we will continue to have to expand the amounts of dollars that we have for emergency services and transitional types of program. We can do better. We have an abundance of $7.7 billion. We don't call it a surplus from MICA. We think that these are dollars, as long as we have people here in Minnesota that are hungry, homeless, don't have their basic needs met, these are dollars that we need to invest in Minnesotans. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Watlow Phillips. If there are any member questions, we'll take those now. Not seeing any. I don't know, Rep. Petersburg, if you, oh, there we go. Representative Petersburg, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think, first of all, I wanted to just say, I think we need to take to heart and kind of really pay attention to what Ms. Michael said from Catholic Charities when she said how easy it is for people to get entrenched into the transitional housing system after just 5 months, and how the longer they're in, the more costly it is and the more energy and effort it takes to get out of that system. To me, that really indicates the importance of what this committee is about, which is prevention of homelessness, so that we actually keep people from actually getting homeless and not getting into that routine. So I think that's important for us to kind of always remember. But my question really revolves around budgeting again, in which this bill is fairly straightforward. It's $95 million over 3 years that is appropriated, but that's not the whole picture. So my question is, what is the base budget for this program over these next 3 years as well, so that we know exactly the amount of funding that we're putting in place? It's just important that we know the whole picture. So if I could get that information, I'd sure appreciate that.
Yes, Representative Petersburg, absolutely. Rep. Ryer, I don't know if you want to take that. I could probably answer it too, or Ms. Otteson maybe could.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you could, or Ms. Otteson, that would be great.
Yeah, I mean, the base of it was a million over the biennium, and then we added $12 million to the base last year, as I recall, but I'll double check that with Ms. Otteson.
I believe that's correct. And Zach, you can correct me if I'm wrong. Thank you, Chair Gomez.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gomez. And Representative Petersburg, to your question. Prior to this biennium, the base budget for this program was $844,000 a year. So around 1.7 per biennium in the base budget. During the last budget session, we were able to add $12 million over the biennium to this, which that means that combined with some of the federal ESG dollars brought the total amount of funding in this funding stream to around $16 million, 16.4. The latest RFP that went through this past summer, though, there was $78 million worth of requests for emergency services or emergency shelters and outreach, which is around 21% of the total asks that were able to be funded. Hopefully that answers your question and provides a clear picture.
Thank you, Mr. Aiken.
So, Madam Chair?
Yeah, please, go ahead.
To be clear, it looks like our base budget for this year is somewhere in that $16 million or so, and $35 million we're adding now would be about a 200% increase. And do we know if there were any tails in the base budgeting into future years as well? And if you can answer that question, then I'll let other people chat. That's my last question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Rep. Petersburg. Okay, so this is my understanding, and Mr. Eichton, you'll jump in if I'm saying it wrong. So the $12 million is not for this year. That's over the biennium. So I think it was like, so it's plus the 1.7. I would, if we're going to talk about ESG then and ESP, then we need to like have a separate discussion because I want us to stay focused on ESP for this one because I get confused by those, the difference between those two programs myself. But so it's so it's like 13.7 million over the biennium is the base. And then this adds 35 million this year and then 30 million or 60 million over the biennium moving forward. So currently in the tails, I mean, or we added, we basically added an extra $12 million to the base. So the base ongoing funding for ESP is $13.7 million for the biennium. This would double that amount, right? Over the, or it would, I mean, it would add 60 million. So, and it's really designed to, you know, to meet the increased need that, that Mr. Eichten referred to. And just like a note about this program, I mean, as a couple people have referred to through their testimony, you know, this was like a really kind of small program, but we found this to be like, and as you talk to providers, this is really like the most flexible and easiest money for them to access. And so it allows for providers to respond to local needs across the state in a way that's like more efficient than some of the other tools that we have in our toolbox. And I think that's why you see it was like so heavily overprescribed or subscribed or whatever, however you want to say. Basically, like there was more need than we were able to provide for. I don't know, Mr. Eichten, if I got that right or if there's anything that you wanted to add.
Yeah, I can just tie it up with a bow is that with the increase of last year, and if we were to look into the future, the base budget for this program would be $36.844 million per year in this specific ESP pot of money.
Great. Thank you. I see Chair Hornstein. Did you have a question or comment?
Hey, thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. I just wanted to underscore what Ms. Watlow Phillips said towards the end of her testimony in regarding the nature of the surplus. We had some discussion about this earlier in the committee, and I really felt, Ms. Watlow Phillips, that when you talked about that we have so many people, and Representative Howard, I think, talked about this as well, so many people in need of support, whether it's food security or housing, but just are the basic needs that people have. You know, this is really, I think, a question of values in our mission. And so I just, you know, couldn't agree with you more, Ms. Watlow Phillips, and in your earlier comments, Representative Howard. And I think those values are things that we should keep in mind, particularly in this committee, but as we move forward as a legislature in discussing the surplus. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering if we have anyone from House Fiscal in the meeting. Oh, we do. I'm sorry to put you on the spot. I'm just really trying to understand the language. The language doesn't read as it normally would to me. And so I just want to make sure I understand and clarify that there's $35 million appropriated for 2023. And then it says the base for this appropriation is $30 million in 2024 and $30 million in 2025. Does that mean that $30 million is being added to the base appropriation and so that would be ongoing? Or is that just for those years?
Please go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative New Brindley, your read of it is correct. So what I'm hearing from the testifiers is that they believe that the base in the tails is being added, but the language currently reads as a reestablishment of it at a $30 million amount. So if it is the intent for the tails to be added to the current biennium's base, then we would need to clean up the language to reflect that amount.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm a little slow sometimes in picking this up, and I just want to make sure I understand it. So does that mean right now, after 2024, the base funding would be an additional $30 million in addition to the, I think they said it was six and a half or seven, it was $12 million for the biennium. So it would actually be $42 million in the TAILS moving forward. That would be the new base funding. The language is not as clear as it usually is. I apologize for the confusion.
No, I think that's, did House Fiscal want to go ahead and answer that question? Sorry, Mr.
Wright. Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Brindley, as written, the appropriation established in fiscal year 24 is a $30 million base in both years. So it is not increasing to the 46 million figure. It is a $30 million base in fiscal year 24 and a $30 million base in fiscal year 25.
Representative Hugh Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I just want to make sure, because typically, like for example, in education funding, we will do a 2% in the first year and a 2% in the second year, which is the way this is written. It's written at 30 million and 30 million. But in this instance, those would not stack. It would just be the 30 million, or would it increase to 60?
Madam Chair, Representative Brindley, my understanding is that it does not stack. It would be $30 million in fiscal year 24 and $30 million in fiscal year 25, with the exception, though, that the grant allocation in 24 of that $30 million does not cancel until the end of the second year.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sorry, there's a lot of back and forth. I appreciate that. I will admit that I am not totally clear on how that functions together, but I appreciate that. So that $30 million would supplant the $12 million moving forward, or would it be in addition to?
Madam Chair,
I'm getting confused now too, because I thought my understanding was that this would take the over the biennium, this would add an additional $60 million on top of the current 13.7, taking us to $73.7 million per biennium in the base moving forward, but maybe that's not true.
that's the way I read it. I apologize, Madam Chair, but the way I read it is that it's actually significantly increasing that base.
So, Mr. Harney, are we in the right direction, or are we not in the right direction?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I would just look to connect with the author and the advocates as this moves to, I don't know, I'm not clear where this will move, but as we can better clarify the intent of what is being drafted, and with the appropriation language to reflect that intent, just so everyone's on the same page.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Harney. So this is going back to our mother committee, I don't know, we'll call it a mother committee, our home committee, excuse me. So this will be heard again in Human Services, Finance, and Policy, and I appreciate you bringing this up, Representative New Brindley, because maybe we're like not understanding properly what's going on here, but we're going to clarify all that before it moves on to its next step. So I appreciate it. Was there anything further, Representative New Brindley?
No, thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg, I saw your hand went back up. Did you have something further?
Well, I was just going to comment on the same situation. It looks to me like the language is intended to just be the $60 million next biennium, and does not move forward into previous bienniums. And so the author will need to find and verify whether or not that's intended to be ongoing or just additional. And it also, in the next meeting, I would also want clarification so that people know that this is in addition to whatever the base is. I just think that's important for everybody to have all the information. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Representative Petersburg. And thanks, Mr. Harney. Sorry for the confusion. Seeing no further discussion from members, I think that we'll go back and see if Representative Ryer, if you have any kind of closing comments that you wanted to offer before we move on to a vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I'd like to thank my colleagues, Representatives New Brindley and Petersburg, for helping clarify the financials on this. And we will certainly go back and make sure that it says what we mean it to say. I too read it in the same way, the standard way of thinking about this. So I appreciate your insights as always. And my thanks also to Representative Hornstein for his comments. Also, I mean, my very heartfelt thanks to Mr. Urbanchek and Ms. Hughes in particular for speaking your truth to us, speaking from your experience and the experience of your people. We do need to have this grounded both in the understanding of fiscal impact, but in the impact on the lives of the people of Minnesota. It's our responsibility to take care of and to invest in and to make sure that all of our people can have the needs of their spirit and body and hearts and minds all met. We can do that. And I think we look at these times, the phrases become trite that it's unprecedented times, but it is. We are still in the pandemic. We are still seeing the disruption. It has shone a light on the pervasive problems of homelessness, which predate the COVID situation. So I ask that we don't look at what we've done in the past. We look at what the need is, and we invest for the need of the people in our community. And so with that closing comment, I would ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Ryer. Hearing no further discussion, Representative Ryer renews her motion that House File 3294 be referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. And the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Gomez?
Gomez, aye.
Gomez, aye. Vice Chair Keeler?
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. Lead New Brindley?
No.
Lead New Brindley, nay. Davids?
Davids, no.
Davids, nay. Heinrich?
Heinrich, no.
Heinrich, nay. Hollins?
Hollins, aye.
Hollins, aye. Hornstein?
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard?
Howard, aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle?
Cagle, aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg?
Petersburg, no.
Petersburg, nay. Ryer?
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. That's seven ayes and four nays.
Thank you. There being seven ayes and four nays, the motion prevails and House File 3294 is on its way back to the Human Services Finance Policy Committee. Seeing no other business before the committee, our next meeting is Wednesday, February 23rd, 10:30 a.m. Thanks so much, everyone, and we are adjourned.